Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today I'm thrilled to introduce returning guest Nathan Hirsch, a top voice in entrepreneurship. And Nathan's journey is nothing short of inspiring. He took a $5,000 investment and turned it into 12 million ARR in just 4 years with FreeUp, all without an office or US employees. Now he's scaling multiple B2B companies and sharing daily advice for entrepreneurs. With expertise in e-commerce, organic marketing, and scaling businesses, Nathan has built five successful ventures and guested on over 900 podcasts, ours being one of them. So I've asked Nathan to come back to continue his story and share his secrets into building and growing businesses. So Nathan, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Thanks so much for having me. It's been a while. It's good to catch up with you a few weeks ago. I know I've been crazy with just family, so thanks for bearing with me, and I'm glad we finally got here.
Yeah, I'm glad we made it happen too. So people that don't know, you started with FreeUp. Tell them a bit about FreeUp. Tell them about what happened with that. I think when we talked, I think you were still just building it. I think the first time you were on our show, you were in the midst of growing FreeUp. And so now that probably was what, 5 years, 4 years ago?
Yeah, we sold it almost 5 years ago. I think our
Yeah.
5 years coming up. Yeah, before FreeUp, I was actually an Amazon seller. I met my business partner, Connor Gillivan, in college, and we started selling on Amazon together in 2009 and grew this business. I quit my college internship, never got a real job after that, and became an entrepreneur. And we grew this Amazon business. We sold about 25 million over a 7 year period, but we never really built anything that was scalable or anything that was sellable or anything that was long term. It was a great cash cow. We were selling other people's products. People didn't really know what e-commerce was. There wasn't that much competition. All these manufacturers eventually figured out that they didn't really need us, and they could just sell their products directly on Amazon. But we learned so much in this business, from accounting to hiring, and we took all our hiring skills and turned it into a freelance marketplace called FreeUp. And we started that as we saw the writing on the wall from the Amazon business. We put $5,000 in, hired a VA, started offering VAs in our network. A lot of VAs we work with in our Amazon business, we started offering them to other sellers. And this really took off. Again, timing was great. All these Amazon sellers were bursting onto the scene. And as their business grew, they had to hire people. And there weren't a lot of e-commerce agencies and stuff like there are now. So we had a nice little niche. Eventually, after a few years, we branched into other marketing channels or other types of VAs and freelancers like marketing and real estate VAs and stuff like that. But we grew this thing to doing about $12 million a year by year four. We ended up getting acquired in 2019 by a company called The Hoth a few months before COVID hit. And since then, we've just been building all these different businesses. And we can talk more about selling the company, which is a whole nother story, but that's the short version.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So obviously from Amazon to then the marketplace, and now you're building multiple. What are you working on now? I think it's accounts balance, right? Looking at your shirts.
Yeah, so we have two bookkeeping brands. We have Accounts Balance for online businesses. We have Ecom Balance, which is a higher price point for e-commerce businesses. Trio SEO, which is our SEO service, and Outsource School, which teaches you how to hire. And our goal is to build a portfolio of these different companies. And we actually have a media company that does promotion for all of them, marketing for all of them, grows our personal brands, and we use our personal brands to drive people to these different businesses. Each of these businesses are really processes in our own business. Like when we figured out bookkeeping at FreeUp, it was a game changer, and now we offer it. We run SEO on all our companies and we offer it. So we like businesses like that. We also hire operators for all these companies for day one. We actually just hired a CEO for our media company. So we're out of operations. We do a lot of strategy and problem solving and help our teams hire and support our operators. But it's a fun way to build a portfolio of businesses where I'm obviously not a bookkeeper. I'm not a CPA. I'm not doing the bookkeeping. Same thing with SEO. We have SEO writers and stuff like that. So being above the business, growing our personal brand, driving ideal clients to our different companies, and supporting our operators however we can. And it's been a fun experience.
Yeah, that's funny. I've been working with Michael Gerber for a couple of months now, and he's the guru. For people that don't know, he's the guy that coined the term "work on, not in your business." And so what you're talking about is great. Can you speak to that? So when you go to start one of these companies, how do you get where you're going? So many people are so caught up in the weeds. The typical business owner is wearing all the hats, doing all the stuff. How do you eliminate yourself from the processes? How do you have a company grow without you?
Yeah, so we already have the billing and the marketing set up for any company that we want. Like we have our own bookkeeping team, we have our own marketing media company. So those things are good to go. And it comes down to having an idea with my business partner, Connor. We brainstorm a lot of bad ideas thrown in there, doing our market research and ideas we like, seeing is there a fit? Can we take a percentage of the market? We like big markets that apply to lots of businesses. Like every business needs bookkeeping. Most businesses need SEO, stuff like that. And then we do some kind of like free offer, 2 free months of bookkeeping, whatever, to get beta clients in there. But we can't really start until we find an operator. So we spend a lot of time networking, posting jobs, talking to different people until we find that right person. And usually it's someone that has the same values as us. They're ethical. We like working with them. They believe in treating people right, treating people. They have to be good at managing. They have to be good at organizing. Usually they have past experience doing whatever we're trying to do. So Shelia ran a bookkeeping business. Steven ran an SEO business before. So they've been there, done that. And they're really good at the fulfillment, but they don't love every part of being an entrepreneur. Maybe they don't like the sales. They don't like the marketing. They just want to do the fulfillment. They don't want to get the clients, which kind of works perfectly with what we're really good at. They don't want to deal with billing and chasing clients down for payments. And we're good. We have all those systems set up ready to go. So then we have the skeleton of it. And then it just comes to, as we add clients, hiring is something that we've always been good at. It's what we teach at Outsource School, our hiring process. As the business grows, we're able to support our operators and hire people and bring insight in using our Outsource School hiring process. So that's the blueprint, always a little different for every business, but we just want to repeat that over and over.
I love that. I love that. And that really does speak to the heart of it. First, you have to find a problem that you can solve. First, you have to prove that you can get clients for it. And then after that, you really have to build up the system so it just runs and runs and runs. And I think part of this also is these are also all client-based businesses, which is great because then it allows you, it's different than if you're selling tacos, because typically if you sell tacos, you got to find different people. So this works really well for businesses of that service vein in the sense of when you get a client, all these clients sounds like they're typically going to be an ongoing client. So one sale. So this allows you to scale and even build a waiting list as needed, which kind of has a built-in safety net to a certain extent that some other businesses may not have. An Amazon store, right? Amazon store, I think would probably would be really different, but depending on what you're selling. If you're selling baby strollers, I think you, the sales volume needs to be a heck of a lot higher. Maybe you can speak to that. Maybe you agree or disagree. But it sounds like with this model, that's a really good formula for you guys, is figure out the problem that you can solve. Make sure you have a couple of people that you can maybe subcontract out to in the beginning that you trust. Start getting some clients. And then once you've honed out those processes, put the proper people in places to have them run it. Now, what about the big step? I know there's a lot of people. What about the big step? Like you talked about just mentioning hiring a CEO. Is there a strategy that you approach once you've got to make some key hires that are going to kill cash flow
Yeah, I
short
mean,
term?
we definitely approach businesses different than we did before. FreeUp, we started with $5,000. These businesses, we start off with a little bit more. We're still not putting in $100,000 into these companies. But the key to getting cash flow is get those initial clients. Let's say that we started this bookkeeping business and we started offering 2 free months of bookkeeping for our first 20 clients. We're going to know in 60 days whether these clients are sticking around or not. And if they don't, like we're moving on pretty quick to another business. And no harm, no foul. So we like to get in, make sure there's a market, get clients up front that fix the cash flow issue and pay for the people that we've hired. And there's creative ways to do it. Like Outsource School, we sold the course before we even made the course. We just did a pre-sale. Hey, if you buy it now, it's a bigger discount and we'll deliver it in 90 days or something. So there's different ways to fund a business. Obviously, as you grow a portfolio, you can use businesses to fund new ones. But we also like when we're hiring these people, if they want it, we're giving them skin in the game too. So they're getting a very fair base salary, but they make more money as the business grows. So they're incentivized. We're finding hardworking people, but we're also not paying top dollar. If they wanted to go work at Apple or Google or some big corporate Fortune 500 company, like sure, they can make more money, have more benefits. But with us, the upside's there. They have more control. It's like they own a company. They get to take ownership of everything. And not everybody wants that, but we like finding people that do. And that makes a big difference where we're partners with these CEOs of the different companies.
No, I love it. I love it because it's, I call it, it's not the E method, the Elon model, but I always talk about Elon how he made $300 million selling a car he had no team to build and no factory to make. Like he
Right.
did $300 million pre-selling a car he had no team to build and no factory to help make. They made one thing and they were like, it's going to be like this, but not this, but like this. Give me $1,000. And he did 100 million. And that was proof of concept that then he went and got the built the Gigafactory and built the team and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's just so fantastic. It's also, we've had Ryan Levesque on the show probably four times,
Yeah, I love
talking about
Ryan.
the ask, yeah, the ask method and that. And sometimes a lot of people say, but what if I can't get 100 surveys answered? And it's, how are you going to grow your business? That's the problem then. You need to figure out who, where are you going to get it? If, how are you going to launch a business? How are you going to feed your kids, pay your rent if you get, can't figure out how to get 100 surveys answered, right? It's that same kind of hustle and grind, so to speak.
Yeah, if I could speak on that for a second, I mean,
Do it.
when we launched our bookkeeping business, we literally interviewed and surveyed 100 different people, and you can find out on the Econ Balance blog. We went to e-commerce sellers and we said, "Can you name five bookkeepers that focus on e-commerce bookkeeping? What do you pay for your current bookkeeper? What do you like about them? What do you not like about them?" And we just wanted to learn everything about the market. And if we ended that research being like, "There's too many competitors," or "The pricing doesn't work. We can't make money on this," or "No one does bookkeeping. Everyone does bookkeeping themselves or uses a tool and doesn't need a bookkeeper." Like, we're not starting that business. Just because we think something's a good idea, we don't actually start the business or hire the operator until we actually talk to the ideal client, because a lot of times what they think is a lot different than what we think.
Right. Yeah. Can you talk about this? How do you test? You already said it a little bit, but to really hit the nail on the head for people, how do you narrow in on a niche? What, like you say, you like big markets. Is the market too big, or how do you walk that dance between a big market and having a niche that you can stand out in?
Yeah, so we like the service to apply to most businesses, but we still want to niche down. And finding your niche is a combination of just research and brainstorming and figuring out what category is underserved. A great example of that is the insurance industry, which I am not in, but I know this lady, Ashlyn. Like, there's a ton of insurance agents out there, but how many of them are focusing on e-commerce? So she was able to stand out because she just picked a niche that no one else was doing. So you got to make sure that niche has a big enough market, that they have a budget. There's downsides of niches too. If e-commerce goes down, which it did after all those aggregators went out of business a few years ago, then it's a tough place to be and a tough place to live. So
Right.
there's pros and cons. I'm a big believer in niching down and then spreading out. Like, when we started FreeUp, first year, just Amazon sellers. Second year, we did Shopify and Walmart. By year three, then we added like e-commerce agencies that we were servicing. And then by year four, we really opened it up to everyone else. And Econ Balance, we did a little different. We offered e-commerce bookkeeping. We were getting all these requests for non-e-commerce bookkeeping, so we opened up a separate one to focus on agencies, SaaS, lawyers, real estate. It's almost like the generic brand, which is a little bit of a lower price point compared to e-commerce, which usually the bookkeeping is a lot more complicated. So we always like to, hey, let's prove it in a niche, and that's always great for marketing. And then if there's an opportunity outside of the niche, there's always different ways you can expand to that.
Yeah, I love that. I had a client once, they were a moving company. And I was, this is earlier in my career, and I was pleasantly surprised to find out that they had two brands under their flag, that this was a local-based business too, like a brick and mortar. So the city I grew up in, the moving company everybody knew was Frank the Mover. They had the trucks, they had this flexing arm, right? Like this Frank the Mover. But they were one of the most expensive moving companies. When I worked with the owner, he was trying to expand and wanted to build a franchise and grow. And I learned out that not only did he own Frank the Mover, but he also owned Move for Less, which was the cheapest moving company in town. And it was the same office. They just had two phones. It was the same secretary. It was the same staff. But when it was Frank the Mover, they wore the branded shirts. They drove the branded trucks. They had the branded like forms, and they got the better service. I'm not trying to say that he was ripping anybody off, but they got the premium service. When it was Move for Less, they just took the white trucks with no logo. They just had white shirts, and there wasn't any, it's like special care, special wrapping, no like putting cardboard down to make sure things don't get scratched. There were no frills on the service. So they got what they paid for, but it wasn't that it was one company that had two tiers of service. It was two companies that offered two tiers of service, and it was the same thing. And I think that's speaking to what you're saying, like there's riches and niches, bitches, and there's nothing really. Especially in today's day and age, where it's like $10 for a domain name, you know what I mean? And whatever, you get another Twilio number. It's not the end of the world if you specialize one niche to be so hyper focused on a type of person and then you just launch a new website. But behind the scenes, it can be a lot of the same song. So I love that. What
absolutely.
When working with your clients with FreeUp, and then even now, what are the biggest mistakes? Obviously, you probably see the certain things over and over again, right? Things people are challenged, like you want to work with people, but they've got these hangups or they're hitting their heads against certain walls. What are the kind of the most common mistakes that you've seen business owners and entrepreneurs make?
Yeah. If you want to grow as an entrepreneur, you have to learn how to hire and you have to be able to trust other people. Like even getting a bookkeeping quote, like we have to be able to see your books. Like we have to either see your books or statements. I was just talking to a client before who's like, hey, I don't want to share my statements with you. It's like, there has to be some level of trust. And to be honest, I never look at our clients' books. I never even look at those statements. They just go to my pricing team, which is a bunch of bookkeepers that they only care about bookkeeping. So that's just one example. But even like FreeUp, like if you're going to hire people, you have to be able to trust them. Could it backfire? Sure. Could someone be out there to screw you over? Of course. But that's part of the risk of being an entrepreneur. And you have to be able to have that trust if you want to grow. If you don't go into something where you can trust someone, it's always going to hold you back. And you're going to end up just doing things you shouldn't be doing. Even if you don't hire my bookkeeping service, you should not be doing your own bookkeeping. That's a terrible use of your time as an entrepreneur. It not only are you probably going to have to pay someone to redo it later, because most of the time it's not going to be right, but your time needs to be focused elsewhere.
Yep.
Same thing with hiring VAs. I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs have just been doing the same task over and over. So you have to be able to get stuff off your plate, delegate, have time to brainstorm, try new things, solve bigger problems, make strategic decisions, and not be in the nitty-gritty of your business. So to me, that's what separates a real entrepreneur from, I don't even have a word for it. It's not really the wannabe entrepreneurs, but what separates that real entrepreneur is someone being like, I know there's a million things that an entrepreneur has to be doing. If I'm starting a company, I need a bookkeeper in place. If I'm starting a company, I'm having a VA. I'm out of fulfillment. Like being like, hey, my specialty is PPC, I'm going to focus my time on that. My specialty is acquisition, sales, whatever it is. And down the line, you could even outsource that. But to start putting yourself in your zone of genius so you get the most out of it and being able to trust that there are people out there that will do things way better than you and putting those people in place earlier rather than later.
Yeah, I really believe like with you that the biggest mistake a lot of people make is they don't have a specific target. I forget where I heard it, but I love it. And it was the path to $1 million is selling one type of solution to one type of problem to one type of person consistently. If you can have a specific type of solution, maybe you've got 2-3 tiers, but it's a type of solution that solves a specific problem. And it's and like you said, there's problems are, Gary Bencivenga said this, problems are markets, not demographics. So the problem is the market. And anytime you have a problem, like if I'm a career counselor, homeless people need jobs and high-powered CEOs need, they might be moving to a new job. So that's two people having the same problem, but two different capacities to pay, two different types of experiences, right? If I help the homeless person, I might be doing it for free, might be doing it for my lowest price that I would ever consider. But if I'm going to do it for the high-powered CEO, I might be able to charge a lot. We might be able to sit over lunch at a really nice, fancy restaurant that they pay for. You know what I mean? Like, it's just two different problems. It's like a football game. You've got one game, and then there's people that steal the stream live at home. There's people at pay-per-view. There's people that go pay a couple of bucks to share and pay for it at the pub. There's people that drive all the way down the stadium. And they sit in the nosebleeds. There's people that want to have their feet on the grass at the hat, right? And then there's people in the big box watching it on TV in the stadium, which I don't quite understand. But hey, and it's different price points, but it's the same event. And so in the same way, the problem is like a lake. And around that lake, there's different birds. And some birds eat fish. Some birds eat insects. Some birds eat fruits and berries. Some birds eat other birds. But it's all around this one problem. So you figure out that problem that you want to solve. You find your stereotype, the demographic, psychographic stereotype of who you want to help. And ideally, you figure out a process, a repeatable, scalable process to reach out to them and contact them. And I think that's exactly a lot of people do. They just fall in love with what they love to do. And they don't focus it as a business. It's about them, not about the people they serve. Everything that you've talked about here was talking about serving other people first. And I think that's something that comes so easily, obviously, for you guys. But I think that's what prevents, because the failure rate of so many businesses is so high. But I think if more people started doing 100 interviews with potential clients. If more people started thinking about the marketplace first and the specifics on that, I think that the rest of it just sounds so much easier. I think that's the problem that a lot of people trip over.
Yeah, I agree. I also always play the long game. If we mess up, if you had a bad experience with NMI companies, we're just going to make it right and try to keep you as a client, try to make sure you're more than happy at the end of the day. This happened with FreeUp all the time. 99% of the time, the freelancers and VAs on the platform did a great job. Every once in a while, a VA would disappear, someone would screw up, someone would quit, and you are at a fork in the road. Like, you can either be like, how can I salvage this and make and lose as little money as possible here? Or you can look at the big picture. How do I make this client happy and whole, save myself a bad review, but more importantly, potentially keep the client, because those become the most loyal clients long-term. They might have a bad experience in year one of FreeUp. I made it right. I gave them $500. I covered the replacement cost of a new VA. I went above and beyond what any marketplace will do. That person trusts me now, and they're clients of FreeUp. They're clients of Accounts Balance. They want to use my SEO service. And those relationships over time are what matters. When you build that trust where, hey, you're going to do the best you can for clients, and if it doesn't go right, you're going to make it whole. Like, that's tough to beat for competitors. And to me, that's what's attributed to so much of Connor and my success, because we have hopefully built the reputation of a brand where if you use our companies and we say we're going to do something, we're going to do it. And on the slim chance that we don't, we're always going to make it right. And there's other stuff around that, like great customer service. Everyone in all my businesses respond within a business day at all times. It's etched into their brain. We try to optimize the client experience and value the client's time at all parts of the sales, quoting, billing stage, everything. So there's stuff around it. But at the end of the day, we're very focused on the client experience and the long-term client experience. And I think that's something I learned at Firestone when I used to work there back in college. Where it's like, hey, you can beat someone over the head and give them the biggest mechanic bill possible, or you can build a relationship, always make stuff, play the long game, and you'll make way more money.
In juggling so many businesses, what are the habits, daily, weekly, quarterly, that you have to have in order to keep the strings on them all? You got a CEO in place, you've got marketing and sales, you got a marketing agency. So what are the handful of things that you have to focus on?
Yeah, most of really my time is split between three things. It's how do we improve marketing, get more clients, and improve the sales process? It's how do we support our operators? So we're meeting with our operators. What problems are they running into and how can we solve them? Is it changing software? Is hiring more people a problem from our experience that they wouldn't have thought of? Stuff like that. It's how do we support them and make sure that they stay happy at the end of the day and help, and we put them in a position to succeed. And then it's just opportunities, whether it's add-on services, new businesses, buying businesses, starting businesses, talking about stuff that we're going to do in future years. That's part of it as well. So that's really how I split my time. The beginning of the day is usually like marketing stuff and dealing with our marketing team, looking at analytics and seeing, hey, what are places that we can improve? And really right now we're training that CEO of our media company. So I spent most of today onboarding him and getting him information, and my time there should even decrease over time. Right. Then it's the middle of the day, checking in with our operators and sit problem solving, see how we can support them. And then if I have a podcast or any calls or networking calls, it's the end of the day. I work Monday through Friday. So I usually like to get on early around like 5:36. I'm usually done by 3. I stayed on a little later for you because I know our time zones are a little whack. And I don't work weekends. I don't do any work travel. I don't go to conferences. Like, I try to set up my ideal lifestyle of what I want to do. And when you're running lots of companies, it would be crazy for me to go to every bookkeeping conference, every SEO conference, stuff like that. And even like podcasts, I go on a few a month now. So I try to protect my time as much as possible and make sure I'm always focused on that, whatever's going to move the needle the most.
I love that. Actually, can I read a poem? It's like a 30 seconder, but this is on my daily reads, because I what you just said is so powerful, because it really comes down to about focus and time. I think that's incredibly important. So here's the poem. Time is the inexplicable raw material of everything. With it, all is possible. Without it, nothing. The supply of time is truly a daily miracle, an affair genuinely astonishing when one examines it. You wake up in the morning and lo, your purse is magically filled with 24 hours of the unmanufactured tissue of the universe of your life. It is yours. It is the most precious of possessions. No one can take it from you. It is unstealable. And no one receives either more or less than you receive. In the realm of time, there is no aristocracy of wealth and no aristocracy of intellect. Genius is never rewarded by even an extra hour a day. And there is no punishment. Waste your infinitely precious commodity as much as you will, and the supply will never be withheld from you. Moreover, you cannot draw on the future. It is impossible to get into debt. You can only waste the passing moment. You cannot waste tomorrow. It is kept for you. You cannot waste the next hour. It is kept for you. I have said the affair was a miracle, is it not? You have to live on this 24 hours of daily time. Out of it, you have to spend health, pleasure, money, content, respect, and the evolution of your immortal soul. Its right use, its most effective use, is a matter of the highest urgency and of the most thrilling actuality. All depends on that. Your happiness, the elusive prize that you are all clutching for, my friends, depends on that. If one cannot arrange that an income of 24 hours a day shall exactly cover all proper items of expenditure, one does muddle one's whole life indefinitely. We shall never have any more time. We have, and we have always had, all the time there is. By Arnold Bennett, How to Live on 24 Hours a Day. I love that because I feel like it gets to the heart of the matter and it speaks to everything that you're saying. As an owner, if you're doing some repetitive task over and over and over and over, maybe you should delegate it. Maybe you should stop being in the business and you should delegate it and create a process around how it needs to be done so somebody else can do it and you can focus on serving more people. I think that's just such a powerful and powerful message.
I love that.
What do you see coming down the pipeline in the future? Obviously, there's a lot happening with technology, a lot happening geopolitically. What are you looking at along your periscope next 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah, I try to not predict the future, to be honest. Like everything to me is white noise. I almost relate it to I invested a lot of stocks and I just buy stuff and hold it forever and ignore any noise around it. Obviously, I've done research and stuff like that, but this is the same way. Like I know AI is changing things. I'm going to hire people that are going to use AI and be familiar with AI and be able to implement that in our company. So to me, that's the best approach. Like, sure, AI could eliminate bookkeeping or eliminate SEO, but no one really has any idea. People can make educated guesses. And sure, if it gets to the point where it's very clear that's going to happen, you pivot. But that's the beauty of running different companies. Sure, AI is going crazy, but our non-compete with FreeUp is at the end of the year. And we definitely want to get back into the space one way or another. People are still going to have to hire other people. I don't think that's going anywhere. It might change. The people you hire might know AI or be able to cut down time with AI. But yeah, that's why I like to focus on boring businesses that apply to a lot of companies. It's why I like to have multiple businesses in my portfolio. Hopefully none of them fail, but if they do, I'll be okay. And it's also just like why I try to put myself in a position to succeed long-term and focus less on like short-term things that could happen. So that's my approach. Yeah, I don't know. To me, I consider a lot of it noise. Stay up to date, but if you're constantly making decisions on what you think the future is going to be, to me, that's a mistake.
I actually agree with you on that because they've been saying when tractors came out, they said we wouldn't need farmers. When calculators came out, they said we wouldn't need mathematicians. When spreadsheets came out, they said we wouldn't need bookkeepers and accountants. Now AI is coming out. It's going to replace us all. These are all tools. Even right now, we're using tools. We're not physically in the same space. So I think we're already cyborgs. I think all of this stuff is just a new version of a tool. Better tools, more powerful tools, dangerous tools, perhaps. But at the end of the day, unless we both were talking about kids at the beginning of the call, there's an actual spark of life that science can't explain. They say it's a release of zinc, but at the moment when the sperm and the egg meet, there's a flash of light, a legitimate flash of light, which I was so surprised. I'm like, this can't be real. It's real. There's a real spark to all of us that are born and live. And that spark, I don't know, it's a je ne sais quoi, but there's a survival instinct inherent in that. And unless we all just decide to roll over and hand the steering wheel of the bus to the AI and whatever, like somebody's going to want to drive this bus. Some people might be at home. They may have been so brainwashed and so demotivated and that they just don't care, whatever. I'm going to sit here and jerk off and drink my Slurpee and play video games and just eat the bugs. Cool. That's their plan. But there's going to be people that don't, that want to grab the bull by the horns, that want to drive the bus. And these things are always going to be tools to us. The bus is a tool. I just don't see that. I agree. I agree with you on that. I just don't see the whole AI is going to become the sentient thing and live beyond us. And we're just going to be like, whatever. I just don't see that. I don't see that happening whatsoever. So now what are some of the most productive methods that you find for marketing and selling the businesses? An Amazon store, a lot of people open up a store and then they have the issue of how do I get people to go here? And how do I get them to buy it from my webpage? What are we talked about before, trying to get 100 surveys answered? What do you
Yeah,
recommend?
we believe in SEO. Obviously, we run an SEO company. We do it for our business. Whenever we start a company, we start a blog and start putting out really high quality content. We have this organic marketing blueprint. If you go to outsourceschool.com/organic marketing, and it's a combination of podcasts, social media, SEO, partnerships, and doing a lot of collaborations with different people, and lead generation, just like outbound DMs and lead generation, and setting up a team for that. So that you can grab our blueprint. It's the same thing we run on all our companies. For whatever reason, we don't do a lot with paid ads. It's probably something that maybe it's holding us back. I don't even know. Like we don't really get enough clients without it. So we've never really had to invest in it. But yeah, that's the same plan we set up with every single company.
And since you mentioned outsourcing school again, obviously you're not going to be able to fit a whole lot in just a few minutes. But typically, what are the most foolish mistakes people make when trying to outsource or delegate? That with a little forward thinking, they can probably avoid. I know it's a big topic. I can't be like, condense your 20 years or whatever experience into 5 minutes. But I think you know what I'm saying. What are
sure.
people
There's
not
a bunch,
paying attention
but a
to?
big one is not onboarding people correctly. Like I mentioned today, I spend a lot of time onboarding our new CEO. People mess up onboarding. They mess up setting expectations. They mess up giving information. They even mess up testing people. Like the last thing you want to do is invest 3 months into someone and then realize they're the bad fit. You got to figure that out in week one and week two. So we teach a lot about how to do that. We've got a structured process for it. A lot of people that have struggled to hire before or made really bad hiring decisions, once they take our onboarding process and put it into their business, they all of a sudden they see a gigantic increase in good hires. So if you're going to focus on anything in your hiring process, fix the onboarding.
I love the testing. How do you test a candidate for a job?
Yeah, it's just like if you were to hire a web developer, you're not going to say, hey, build my website at 25 pages, show me when you're done. You should say, build me one page, show it to me, take my feedback, show me that you can adjust to my feedback, and then do two more pages and repeat. And it's the same thing when hiring someone, have them prove along every step of the way that they can handle it, that they can do a good job, and that they can listen to your feedback, and that they have the right personality where they're working with you and it's not you versus them. So we like to break down things. A lot of people make mistakes of overwhelming people, loading them up too much. We like to really break it down and have them prove themselves. And then when we trust someone, then we're all in. Then it's off our plate and we can move pretty quick.
This is a bit of an issue, I know, especially if you're in bookkeeping and taxes and stuff. Contractor versus employee. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I know there's a lot of people that I'll just make them a contractor, but at a certain point, they're not a contractor. And then there's some people that make people, like, I'll let you answer it, but.
Yeah, I probably won't answer that. That's a legal question. It mostly impacts people that are hiring you people in the US. And the default, we got to remember, is an employee. If you're hiring someone in the US, if you're training them, they're working full time for you. If they're coming to your office, if you're their only piece of work, like they're an employee per the US laws. And then when you get outside the US, that's like a whole gray area that I don't feel like it's been resolved. So that's all I'll say on that. But talk
sure.
to your own CPA, talk to a lawyer, and make your own decisions.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I love that. So what are some of the specific behaviors that you believe are important for staff to improve and develop as a company? And how do you, like, in terms of developing culture, we've talked about you have to test them, you have to onboard them, set their expectations. Now you've got these people that you hired, you think they're okay, but they're doing the day-to-day, you're not there for the day-to-day. How do you develop and improve a culture without your presence?
So a big thing that you have to figure out early on is, can the person on your team manage people? And are they good at managing people? Do they want to manage people? Because not everyone does, and there's different roles in your company that you can put people in. We had this great bookkeeper, more experience than anyone on our team. We really liked her. She was terrible at managing people. Like when we would build a team around her, she would still do great, but she just didn't have that managing skill. She didn't like managing people. She didn't want to. So again, not everyone wants that. So we found a role underneath our CEO where she was a number two and she's excelled. She proofreads client books before they go out. She helps solve problems when people bring them to her. She just can't manage people and doesn't want to. So That's a big difference. Even in my wife's job, she almost had two different corporate tracks where you could become a director and manage people, or you can become more of like a project person and you're working solo, or you're working with under one other person, but you're on the same team. You're not managing them. And I even gave her the advice, this was years ago, managing people is hard. You have to really make sure you want to do that. And there's people that want to and people that don't. So that's an important thing to figure out in your company, because your culture really depends on that. You want people that can manage people and install your culture into them. When someone starts at any of my businesses, yes, I onboard them and I set expectations. But once it's passed to the manager, they're the ones that are putting those expectations on and holding them to it. And speaking up if there's a bad apple. And if you have someone who's, oh, Bob's nice, but he's not that great, but I don't want to speak up and get him fired, that doesn't fly. You need someone in there who's going to lay down the law in a nice way, but be able to speak to who's an A player and who's not and get the most out of people. And you have to find a balance of both. There might be certain roles in your company where you don't need a manager, you need an executor. And then there might be certain roles where you can't take a vacation, or you can't grow, or you can't get out of fulfillment until you find someone who can manage people. And so figuring that early on it is incredibly key.
Question, but then I was listening to what you're saying and I forgot it. I was going to ask about, what was I going to ask about? That's okay. It's gone. It must come back. So now when we're talking about, so you have to have the two tracks managing. Oh, personality test. Do you believe in that? Are you an advocate for doing any sort of personality testing of staff and teams and that sort of thing?
I'm not, to be honest. There's plenty of people smarter than me that live and die by the personality test. That's just not my thing. We vet people for skill, attitude, and communication. We have a certain type of people that we like working with. We figure that we use the outsource school hiring process for that. We don't really look at the personality test.
So you're not trying to build a team of ENFJs with IPVXs and right? You're not worried about, you're not hiring to those. You're, it sounds like you're building a meritocracy. That's crazy concept there. I don't know. I don't know if that'll work, Nathan. I don't know if hiring people based on merit is a good
Yeah, personalities
strategy.
are tough. I don't know. Again, there's so many things as an entrepreneur. Like, you got to be doing this process and this and this. And eventually, you got to take things from different places and put them in your own way that works and that gets success. And when something's not broken, sometimes you just don't need to fix it. So, we like the way we hire. It's proven to put out really good people that stick around for a very long period of time. That's how we do it.
And you invest in regular training for these people? Is that something? Is it a quarterly thing, an annual thing?
Yeah, absolutely. We're always buying courses, supporting them with different resources. Sometimes you'll get a new software and they'll have a whole training program for you to go through. Our controllers, our CEOs, they're always training our team. They've got weekly meetings where they're going through it. I know our CEO just set up meetings weekly with all our people going forward. Yeah, training is constant, and it's something you got to get out of too, because eventually you'll just burn yourself out training people.
So talking about getting out of things, what about the sales? What's your experience been in terms of trying to outsource sales?
Yeah, so we I'd free up like by the year two, I wasn't doing sales anymore. Outsource school, I don't do sales with the account, with the bookkeeping and the SEO. Right now, I do the sales. That's something what we will figure out. To be honest, we like the economy of scales. In the perfect world, you got one sales team and they're doing sales for all your different companies. But like our stuff is so down that the sales calls are so short. Like, for monthly bookkeeping, we only offer one thing: monthly bookkeeping. We don't do sales tax. We don't do regular tax. We don't do AR. We don't do AP. We don't keep Google Docs for clients. We don't do customized reports. Like, we offer one thing. I don't quote people on calls. We have a pricing team. We have a pricing process. So all the calls are relatively short. It's, hey, this is what we offer. I'll answer the few questions that you have. Tell me a little bit about your business, like how many banks do you have, stuff like that. And they're pretty straightforward. So that's something that I like to do at the beginning of our companies. Maybe it's something that holds me back. I don't know. But eventually we will outsource to just free up. It's just right now, as we're trying to grow and we're hiring people that are almost freeing up my time, where it's like, hey, they're taking off the marketing. I've stopped doing podcasts. I don't do work travel. Like, doing sales calls and having them convert now is great. And it's always something I can outsource later.
But with free up, when you got out of doing the sales, what was that process like? Because I think there is a crawl, walk, run process into it. Every business is a little bit different. Just because you have someone that can sell one thing doesn't mean that they can sell another thing, even though they have the sales skill. It's a
Right.
weird thing like that. So I'm just curious, at least with FreeUp, maybe you could speak to your experience with FreeUp in terms of getting
Yeah,
out of
and
the
we have
sales.
an SOP, an outsource school on how we hire really good sales reps, same way I hired them at FreeUp. Essentially, we hired from the Philippines. FreeUp was our internal team was 30 people that did everything from marketing, sales, billing, all of that. But we hired someone that was comfortable on calls. I recorded calls with clients with their permission, had the VA watch those calls. They had a script with our sales pitch, all common questions and answered. We trained them. They had to memorize that. And then they would record their own calls and we would listen back and give them feedback. And that's how you train someone to do sales calls.
Yeah, I think that's how you train someone to do anything. In fact, I think the Boy Scouts had the EDGE method, which was explain, demonstrate, guide, and empower. So first you have to explain the task, then you have to be able to demonstrate the task being done successfully a few times over, then you have to guide them to do it under your supervision, and then you empower them to do it on their own and come to you when they have questions. And I think that's really important. Because I think a lot of people, and especially in my career and being a business coach for probably some like 20 years now, so many people hire someone and they just throw stuff at them, go, and that's it. There's no, and salespeople, they hire salespeople, they send them a script, and no, there's no proven the script works. How do I say this script? What's the intonation? Where? There's none of that. So it sounds like really there's a couple of controversial things you're mentioning here, Nathan. I don't know if you realize that. One is building a company based off of people's merits. That's really controversial in today's day and age. The second one is actually doing the work until you have a repeatable process penned down. That's crazy. And the third is having a really clear who and what. I love that. You talked about with the bookkeeping company that you have one thing. We do one thing for one type of person really well. And I think if someone can figure out those three things, that'll probably put them ahead of a lot of their competitors in their industry, in their niche. Is there anything you would add to that?
No, you nailed it. We try to keep everything simple. We keep everything lean. We're frugal. We try to treat people well, both clients and our team, and just have a lot of fun doing it. Like business is hard, right? Like businesses fail. I definitely believe in hustling, especially when you're young. Like when I was in my 20s, I had no kids, no responsibilities. If I failed, I could always go out and get a real job. And that was the time for me to work 80 hours a week and go to every conference and network and do stuff. And it worked. We sold FreeUp. It changed my life. And as long as there's an endpoint, as soon as we sold FreeUp, I'm like, what do I not like doing? What am I going to eliminate? And any company I build going forward, I'm only building it if these requirements are in place. And I don't necessarily agree with the Alex Hormozi, who's, hey, like all I do is work and that's it until I'm burnt out and then I watch
Right.
Netflix and I work again. To me, that's a crazy way to live life. But I also don't agree with the people that are like,
It doesn't have
business is
kids.
easy from day one. Like you shouldn't be like doing it. You should be working 9 to 5. To me, usually that's not realistic. Sure, there's always exceptions, right? There's the people who got a lucky break. They found the right industry. They set something up the right way, whatever. And they do get to that. But for most entrepreneurs, you have to work really hard at the beginning, but make sure that you have an end goal in sight.
I love that. I love that so much. Nathan, I appreciate your time. I know that it's because of time zone, it's taken some effort to make this happen. This has been a great call. People may want to listen to it more than once to make sure they get all the gold out of it. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
No, I don't know. I'm going to work out after this. I believe in 1 hour HIIT workouts every day. I'm a big
Yeah.
proponent of just like health, but
Yep.
yeah, no, nothing crazy. To me, it's if you work out 1 hour every day and cut out fast food, cut out soda, stuff like that, you're healthier than 99% of people. So
Yeah.
I'm religious about that.
Yeah. No, actually, I'm a health nut too. I eat research papers like candy. This intensified during the COVID pandemic when you couldn't trust what you were being told. And so really it's get 800 grams of veggies and fruits per day, fresh fruits and veggies, more veggies than fruits if you can. You need about a gram of protein per pound of body weight. You need 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night. The hours of sleep you get before 10 p.m. are worth more. You need around 10,000 steps a day is a good benchmark for the typical person. At least more than 6,000 steps if you're busy and can't get this, that done. And then aside from that, you need to work out 3 to 5 times a week. You need to pick up heavy stuff for your bones, joints, and ligaments. You need to tax your lung and heart for your cardiovascular system. And you need to do some body weight stuff to improve your strength to weight ratio and a combination of those three things. And so that's where walking on its own is not exercise. And a lot of people, when they work out, it's very one-dimensional. And it's okay if that's what you love to do, it's better than nothing. But if you want to be well balanced and have all round kind of base level fitness, then you probably need to do all three. And for a lot of people, doing those things, like you mentioned, like eating meat, veggies, nuts, seeds, fruit, eggs, kind of coffee, tea, water, avoiding sugar, you'll avoid 7 of the 10 things that kill people early. Most things people don't realize. Most people, and this has been the big wake-up call, you may or may not agree, but I'm tacking this on here anyway. Call me a conspiracy theorist. Most people would not believe how parasitic certain industries are on us as people. And maybe they're not even intentioning. It's the whole, hey, if I want to smoke cigarettes and I should be allowed to smoke cigarettes. But with some of the marketing that goes out, it really just does seems very nefarious. And people just don't realize that not everything in the jungle kills you and eats you. Some things just attach onto you and feed on you like a parasite. And if we went through most people's houses, their kitchens, they would be full of things that they buy because they bought it and their parents bought it and all that. But there's, like you said, it's actually killing them. Like seed oil. Seed oils are terrible. They cause all sorts of issues. We shouldn't be using. Anyways, I'm on a soapbox now, but.
Now we got to have a whole nother podcast.
I know to get about that. I see you biting your lip. I know you probably want to jump in too. If people want to learn more though, if they want to find out, if they want to get in touch, what are some of the best ways for them to reach out?
Yeah. NathanHirsch.com or follow me on social media, Nathan Hirsch.
So look up Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N. Hirsch, H-I-R-S-C-H. That's N-A-T-H-A-N-H-I-R-S-C-H. You can look them up under outsourceschool.com, ecombalance.com, accountsbalance.com. And of course, just search his name online. You'll find him organically on social media or otherwise. Nathan, thank you for joining us. It's been an honor and a pleasure knowing you've got your own family, your own direct reports, your own followers. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience tonight so we can all do a little bit better.
Thanks so much, man.